Chapter 51. How God may be seen in his essence. Since then it is impossible for a natural desire to be void, and it would be were it impossible to arrive at understanding the divine substance, for all minds desire this naturally, we must conclude that it is possible for the divine substance to be seen by means of the intellect, both by separate intellectual substances, and by our souls. It is sufficiently clear from what has been said what manner of vision this is, for we have proved that the divine substance cannot be seen by the intellect in any created species. Wherefore, if God's essence be seen at all, it must be that the intellect sees it in the divine essence itself, so that in that vision the divine essence is both the object and the medium of vision. Since, however, the intellect is unable to understand any particular substance, unless it be actuated by some species informing it, that is the image of the thing understood, someone might deem it impossible for a created intellect to see the very substance of God in the divine essence as an intelligible species, inasmuch as the divine essence is self-subsistent, and we have proved in the first book, God cannot be the form of anything. In order to understand this truth, we must note that a self-subsisting substance is either a form alone, or is composed of matter and form. Accordingly, that which is composed of matter and form cannot be the form of something else, because the form therein is already confined to that matter, so that it cannot be the form of another thing. But that which subsists so as nevertheless to be a form alone, can be the form of something else, provided its being be such that some other thing can participate in it, as we have proved concerning the human soul in the second book. If, however, its being cannot be participated in by another, it cannot be the form of anything, because by its very being it is determined in itself, as material things are by their matter. Now we must consider this as being the case not only with regard to substantial or natural being, but also as regards intelligible being. For, since truth is the perfection of the intellect, that intelligible which is truth itself, will be a pure form in the genus of intelligible things. This applies solely to God, for, since truth is consequent upon being, that alone is its own truth, which is its own being, and this belongs to God alone, as we proved in the second book. Consequently, other subsistent intelligibles are not pure forms in the genus of intelligible things, but have a form in a subject, for each of them is a true thing, but not the truth, even as it is a being, but not being itself. It is therefore clear that the divine essence can be compared to the created intellect as an intelligible species by which it understands, which cannot be said of the essence of any separate substance, and yet it cannot be the form of another thing as to its natural being, for it would follow that being united to this other, it would constitute one nature, which is impossible, since the divine essence is perfect in itself in its own nature, whereas the intelligible species in its union with the intellect, does not constitute a nature, but perfects the intellect to the effect of understanding, and this is not inconsistent with the perfection of the divine essence. This immediate vision of God is promised to us in Holy Writ. We see now through a glass in a dark manner, but then face to face. It would be impious to understand this in a material way, and imagine a material face in the Godhead, since we have proved that God has no body. Nor is it possible for us to see God with a bodily face, since the eyes of the body, which are situate in the face, can only see bodily things. Thus then shall we see God face to face, because we shall see him immediately, even as a man whom we see face to face. It is according to this vision that we become most like unto God, and participators of his bliss, since God understands his substance by his essence, and this is his bliss. Wherefore it is said, when he shall appear, we shall be like to him, because we shall see him as he is. And our Lord said, I dispose to you, as my Father hath disposed to me, a banquet, that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom. Now these words cannot be understood as referring to the food and drink of the body, but to that which is taken from the table of wisdom, of which wisdom says, eat my bread and drink the wine which I have mingled for you. Accordingly, to eat and drink at God's table is to enjoy the same bliss as that which makes God happy, and to see God as he sees himself. Chapter 52. That no created substance can by its natural power arrive at seeing God in His essence. However, it is not possible for any created substance to attain, by its own power, to this way of seeing God, for that which is proper to the higher nature cannot be acquired by a lower nature, except through the action of the higher nature to whom it properly belongs. Thus water cannot become hot except through the action of heat. Now to see God in His essence is proper to the divine nature, since to operate through its own form is proper to the operator. Therefore no intellectual substance can see God in the divine essence, unless God Himself bring this about. Again, a form proper to it does not become bees except through A's agency, because an agent produces its like by communicating its form to another. Now it is impossible to see the divine substance unless the divine substance itself become the form by which the intellect understands, as we have proved. Therefore no created substance can attain to that vision, except through the divine agency. Besides, if any two things have to be united together so that one be formal and the other material, their union must be completed by an action on the part of the one that is formal, and not by the action of the one that is material, because the form is the principle of action, whereas matter is the passive principle. Now in order that the created intellect see God's substance, the divine essence itself must be united to the intellect as an intelligible form, as we have proved. No created intellect can attain to this vision except through the divine agency. Further, what is so of itself is the cause of what is so through another. Now the divine intelligence sees of itself the divine substance, for the divine intelligence is the divine essence, in which God's substance is seen, as we proved in the first book. Whereas the created intellect sees the divine substance in the divine essence as in something other than itself. Therefore this vision cannot be acquired by the created intellect, except through the action of God. Moreover, whatever exceeds the limits of a nature cannot be acquired by that nature except through the agency of another. Thus water does not flow upwards unless it be moved by something else. Now it is beyond the limits of any created nature to see God's substance, because it is proper to every created intellectual nature to understand according to the mode of its substance, whereas the divine substance cannot be understood thus, as we proved above. Therefore no created intellect can possibly attain to a vision of the divine substance except by the agency of God, who surpasses all creatures. Hence it is said the grace of God is life everlasting. For we have proved that man's happiness consists in seeing God, which is called life everlasting, and we are set to obtain this by God's grace alone, because that vision surpasses the faculty of every creature, and it is impossible to attain thereto except by God's gift. And when such things are obtained by a creature, it is put down to God's grace. Again our Lord says, I will manifest myself to him. Chapter 53. That the created intellect needs a ray of the divine light in order to see God in his essence. To so sublime a vision the created intellect needs to be raised by some kind of outpouring of the divine goodness, for it is impossible that the proper form of anything become the form of another, unless this other bear some resemblance to the thing to which that form properly belongs. Thus light does not actuate a body which has nothing in common with the diaphanous. Now the divine essence is the proper intelligible form of the divine intellect, and is proportionate thereto, for these three: understanding, medium of understanding, and object understood, are one in God. Therefore that same essence cannot become the intelligible form of a created intellect, except through the created intellect participating in some divine likeness. Therefore this participation in a divine likeness is necessary in order that the divine substance be seen. Again, nothing can receive a higher form unless it be disposed thereto through its capacity being raised, because every act is in its proper power. Now the divine essence is a higher form than any created intellect. Wherefore in order that the divine essence become the intelligible species to a created intellect, which is requisite in order that the divine substance be seen, the created intellect needs to be raised for that purpose by some sublime disposition. Besides, if two things from not being united become united, this must be either through both being changed, or one only. Now if we suppose that some created intellect begin to see the divine essence, it follows from what we have said, that the divine essence is united to that intellect as an intelligible species, but it is impossible that the divine essence be changed, as we have proved. Therefore this union must begin through a change in the created intellect, and this change can only consist in the created intellect acquiring some new disposition. The same conclusion follows if we suppose some created intellect to be endowed from the outset of its creation with such a vision, for if, as we have proved, this vision exceeds the faculty of nature, it is possible to conceive any created intellect as complete in its natural species without its seeing God's substance. Consequently, whether it see God from the beginning, or begin to see Him afterwards, its nature needs something to be added to it. Further, nothing can be raised to a higher operation except through its power being strengthened. Now a power may be increased in two ways. First, by a mere intensifying of the power, thus the active power of a hot subject is increased by the intensity of the heat, so that it is capable of a more vehement action in the same species. Secondly, by the addition of a new form, thus the power of a diaphanous body is increased so that it can give light, through its being made actually lightsome by receiving the form of light anew. This increase of power is necessary in order that the resultant operation of another species. Now the natural power of the created intellect is not sufficient for the vision of the divine substance, as we have shown. Therefore its power needs to be increased, in order that it attain to that vision. But increase through intensification of the natural power is insufficient, because that vision is not of the same kind as the natural vision of the created intellect, which is clear from the distance of the things seen. Therefore there must be an increase of the intellective power through its receiving a new disposition. Now owing to the fact that we derive our knowledge of intelligible beings from sensible things, we transfer the terms employed in sensual knowledge to our intellectual knowledge, especially those that appertain to the sight, which of all the senses is the highest and most spiritual, and therefore most akin to the intellect, and for this reason intellectual knowledge is called sight. And because bodily sight is not affected without light, those things which serve for the perfection of intellectual vision are called light. Wherefore Aristotle compares the active intellect to light, because the active intellect makes things actually intelligible, even as light somewhat makes things to be actually visible. Accordingly, the disposition whereby the created intellect is raised to the intellectual vision of the divine substance is rightly called the light of glory, not that it makes the object actually intelligible, as the light of the active intellect does, but because it makes the intellect able actually to understand. This is the light of which it is said, "In thy light we shall see light," i.e., the light of the divine substance. Again it is said, "The city, namely of the blessed, hath no need of the sun, nor of the moon, for the glory of God hath enlightened it." Again it is said, "Thou shalt no more have the sun for thy light by day, neither shall the brightness of the moon enlighten thee, but the Lord shall be unto thee for an everlasting light, and thy God for thy glory." For this reason too, since in God to be is the same as to understand, and because He is to all the cause of their understanding, He is said to be the light that was the true light which enlighteneth every man that cometh into this world. And God is light, and thou art clothed with light as with a garment. For this reason too, both God and the angels are described in Holy Writ and figures of fire, on account of the brilliancy of fire. 54. Chapter 54. Arguments that would seem to prove that God cannot be seen in His essence, and the solution thereof. Someone will object against the foregoing: no additional light can help the sight to see things that surpass the natural faculty of corporeal sight, since the sight can see only colored objects. Now the divine substance surpasses the whole faculty of a created intellect, more even than intelligence surpasses the senses' capacity. Therefore no additional light can raise the created intellect to see the divine substance. Again, this light that is received into the created intellect is something created. Therefore, it also is infinitely distant from God, and consequently such a light cannot help the created intellect to see the divine substance. Besides, if the aforesaid light can do this for the reason that it is an image of the divine substance, since every intellectual substance, for the very reason that it is intellectual, bears a likeness to God, the nature itself of an intellectual substance will suffice for it to see God. Further, if this light is created, since there is no reason why that which is created should not be connatural to some creature, there might possibly be a creature that would see the divine substance through its connatural light. But the contrary of this has been proved. Moreover, the infinite, as such, is unknown. Now we proved in the first book that God is infinite. Therefore, the divine substance cannot be seen through the light in question. Furthermore, there should be proportion between the understanding and the thing understood. But there is no proportion between the created intellect, even perfected by this light, and the divine substance, for there still remains an infinite distance between them. Therefore, the created intellect cannot be helped by any light to see the divine substance. By these and like arguments, some have been induced to maintain that the divine substance is never seen by a created intellect. This opinion both would destroy the rational creature's true happiness, which can consist in nothing but the vision of the divine substance, as we have proved, and is contrary to the authority of Holy Writ, as appears from what we have said. Wherefore it should be rejected as false and heretical. It is not difficult, however, to answer the above arguments, for the divine substance is not so outside the range of the created intellect, as to be absolutely beyond its reach, as sound is to the sight, or an immaterial substance to the senses, because the divine substance is the first intelligible, and the principle of all intellectual knowledge. Yet it is outside the range of the created intellect, as exceeding its power, just as the highest sensibles are outside the range of the senses. Wherefore the philosopher says that our intellect stands in relation to the most evident things, as the owl's eye does in relation to the sun. Therefore the created intellect needs to be strengthened by some divine light in order to be able to see the divine substance. This solves the first argument. Moreover, this light raises the created intellect to the vision of God, not on account of its affinity to the divine substance, but on account of the power which it receives from God to produce such an effect, although in its being it is infinitely distant from God, as the second argument stated. For this light unites the created intellect to God, not in being but only in understanding. Since, however, it belongs to God Himself to understand His substance perfectly, the light in question is a likeness of God in this, that it perfects the intellect for seeing the divine substance. Now no intellectual substance can be like God in this way, for since no created substance's simplicity is equal to the divine simplicity, it is impossible for the created substance to have its entire perfection in one subject, for this is proper to God, as we proved in the first book, who is being, understanding and blessed in respect of the same. Consequently in the intellectual substance the created light through which it is raised to the beatific vision of God, differs from any light whereby it is perfected in its specific nature, and understands proportionately to its substance. Hence the reply to the third argument is clear. The fourth argument is solved thus. The vision of the divine substance surpasses all natural power, as was shown. Consequently the light whereby the created intellect is perfected in order to see the divine substance must needs be supernatural. Nor can the fact that God is infinite be an obstacle to the vision of the divine substance, as the fifth objection argued. For He is not said to be infinite by way of privation, as quantity and the infinite of this kind is reasonably unknown, because it is like matter devoid of form, which is the principle of knowledge. But He is said to be infinite negatively, as a per se subsistent form that is not limited by being received into matter. Wherefore that which is infinite in this way is in itself most knowable. There is indeed proportion between the created intellect and understanding God, a proportion not of measure, but of aptitude, such as of matter for form, or cause for effect. In this way there is no reason against there being in the creature a proportion to God, consisting in the aptitude of an intelligent being for an intelligible object, as well as of effect in respect of its cause. Wherefore the solution of the sixth objection is clear. Chapter 55. That the created intellect does not comprehend the divine substance. The mode of any action whatever depends on the efficacy of its active principle, for that which has the stronger heat imparts greater heat. Consequently the mode of knowledge also must depend on the efficiency of the principle of knowledge. Now the light mentioned above is a principle of knowing God, since thereby the created intellect is raised to the vision of the divine substance. Accordingly, the mode of the divine vision must be commensurate with the power of this same light. But this light is far short in strength of the clarity of the divine intelligence. Wherefore it is impossible that the divine substance be seen in the aforesaid light as perfectly as it is seen by the divine intellect. Now the divine intellect sees this substance as it is perfectly visible, because the truth of the divine substance and the clarity of the divine intellect are equal. Nay more, they are one. Therefore the created intellect cannot possibly by the aforesaid light see the divine substance as perfectly as it is perfectly visible. Now whoever knows a thing so as to comprehend it, knows it as perfectly as it is knowable. Thus whoever knows that a triangle has three angles equal to two right angles, as a matter of opinion based on probable reasons, because wise men say so, does this not yet comprehend it. But only he who knows it as a scientific conclusion, through the medium that causes that conclusion. Therefore the created intellect cannot possibly comprehend the divine substance. Again, a finite power cannot in its operation rise to the level of an infinite object. Now the divine substance is something infinite in comparison with every created intellect, since every created intellect is confined to a certain species. Therefore the vision of a created intellect cannot possibly rise to the level of the divine substance in seeing it. Namely in seeing the divine substance as perfectly as it is visible. Therefore no created intellect comprehends it. Further, every agent acts perfectly so far as it perfectly participates in the form that is the principle of action. Now the intelligible form by which the divine substance is seen is the divine essence itself, and although it becomes the intelligible form of the created intellect, the created intellect does not grasp it as much as it can be grasped. Therefore it does not see it as perfectly as it can be seen. Therefore it is not comprehended by the created intellect. Besides, nothing comprehended goes beyond the limits of the comprehender. Consequently, if the created intellect were to comprehend the divine substance, this would not exceed the limits of the created intellect, which is impossible. Therefore the created intellect cannot possibly comprehend the divine substance. We do not, however, say that the divine substance is seen, yet not comprehended by a created intellect, as though something thereof were seen and something not seen, since the divine substance is utterly simple. But because it is not seen as perfectly by the created intellect as it is visible, even as one who holds a demonstrated conclusion as an opinion is said to know it but not to comprehend it, because he does not know it perfectly, that is scientifically, although there be no part of it that he knows not. Chapter 56. That no created intellect, in seeing God, sees all that can be seen in him. Hence it is clear that though the created intellect may see the divine substance, it knows not all that can be seen in the divine substance. For then alone does it necessarily follow that if one principle be known, all its effects are known in it, when that principle is comprehended by the intellect, because then is a principle known as to its whole power, when all its effects are known from it. Now other things are known from the divine essence, as effects are known from their cause. Consequently, since the created intellect cannot know the divine substance so as to comprehend it, it does not follow that because it sees it, it sees also all that can be known in it. Again, the higher the intellect, the more it knows, either a greater number of things, or at least more about the same things. Now the divine intellect surpasses every created intellect, and consequently it knows more things than any created intellect. Yet it knows not things except through knowing its own essence, as we proved in the first book. Therefore more things are knowable in the divine essence, than any created intellect can see therein. Besides, the measure of a power is according to what it can do. Consequently, to know all that a power can do is the same as to comprehend that power. But, since the divine power is infinite, no created intellect can comprehend it any more than it can comprehend its essence, as we proved above. Neither, therefore, can a created intellect know all that the divine power can do. Yet all the things that the divine power can do are knowable in the divine essence, because God knows them all, and not otherwise than in His essence. Therefore, a created intellect, by seeing the divine essence, does not see all that can be seen in the divine substance. Moreover, no cognitive power knows a thing except under the aspect of its proper object. Thus, by sight we do not know a thing except as colored. Now the proper object of the intellect is what a thing is, namely the essence of a thing, as stated in 3 De Anima, 4. Consequently, whatever the intellect knows of a thing, it knows it through the knowledge of its essence, so that whenever by demonstration we become acquainted with the proper accidents of a thing, we take as principle what that thing is, as stated in 1 Poster, I, 4. On the other hand, if the intellect knows the essence from its accidents, according to the statement in 1 De Anima, I, that accidents are a great help in knowing what a thing is, this is accidental, insofar as the knowledge of the intellect arises from the senses. And so by knowing the accidents as perceived by the senses, we need to arrive at knowing the substance. For this reason, this does not occur in mathematics, but only in physics. Consequently, whatever cannot be known in a thing by knowing its substance must be unknown to the intellect. Now by knowing the substance of one who wills, we cannot arrive at knowing what he wills, because the will does not tend altogether naturally to that which it wills. For which reason the will and nature are said to be two active principles. Therefore the intellect cannot know what a person wills, except that it may do so from certain effects. Thus if we see a person working willingly, we know what he willed, or again from a cause, thus God knows what we will, as also other of his effects, in that he is the cause of our willing, or again by someone insinuating his will to another, as when by speaking he makes known his likes and dislikes. Since then many things depend on God's simple will, as we have partly shown above, we'll show yet more clearly further on. Although the created intellect may see the divine essence, it does not know all the things that God sees in his essence. Someone may object to what has been said, that God's substance is something greater than all the things he can do, or understand, or will, except himself. Wherefore if the created intellect can see God's substance, much more can it know all that God either understands, or wills, or can do, except himself. But if we consider carefully, to know a thing in itself is not the same as to know it in its cause, since there are things which are easy to know in themselves, but not easy to know in their causes. It is true, then, that to know God in himself is more than to know anything else besides him, if this can be known in itself. But it belongs to a more perfect knowledge to know the divine substance and to see its effects therein, than to know the divine substance without seeing its effects in it. And it is possible to see the divine substance without comprehending it. But it is not possible to know all that can be known in that substance, without comprehending it, as we have proved. Dash.